I'm Pierre Lumumba here at the Aberdares Country Club and Sanctuary in Nyeri County in Kenya, and of course the continent of Africa. And we are talking Africa. And today we talk about, in my view, and in the view of many, one of the greatest Africans that ever bestrode this earth. In fact, it is said of him, Kwame Nkrumah is dead. Nkrumah never dies. This man was ahead of his times, born in Nkorofu in what is today called Ghana. And for Africa, Nkrumah becomes important because of the role that he played in an attempt to unite Africa. We know that he went to school at Lincoln, and the story is told, whether it's apocryphal or not, he's neither here or nor there, but it helps our story, that when he was told to write a personal statement as a condition precedent to joining Lincoln University, he wrote, "There is so much to be done, so little time." And when he goes to Lincoln University, he meets great individuals and interacts with individuals such as Nnamdi Azikiwe, and ultimately begins to think Africa. And it is instructive that he joins the struggle for independence, and he comes known to the world a lot more effectively in 1945 in Manchester, when he is one of the few people from the African continent that attend the conference which is held in London, the Pan-African Conference. And the struggle for independence of Ghana is then proceeding in earnest. And he goes back to Ghana and he's not satisfied with the process. He thinks that this is too slow. And when he forms his political party and Ghana regains independence in 1957, he becomes iconic to the world. When on that day, he says that the independence of Ghana means nothing if Africa is not free. He then begins a series of meetings which are designed to unite Africa. And it must be remembered that the neo-colonizers were very clear in their mind that they would never allow Africa to unite. So when Nkrumah calls a meeting jointly with the King of Morocco in Casablanca in 1960, they are also convening a meeting in Monrovia, and another one in Brazzaville, and another one in Antananarivo in what was then known as Malagasy, giving birth to two schools about African unity. The Monrovia group, which says that African unity should be slow and should not be as intimate as it should be. And then, of course, it also gives birth to the Casablanca group. But before the 1960 meeting in Casablanca, Nkrumah convenes a meeting, the first all-African meeting in Accra, Ghana, in 1958. By that time, Ghana had been renamed as Ghana from Gold Coast in 1957. And there is a debate as to who gave the country the name Ghana. Some say it is Dankwa, some say it is Nkrumah, but that is neither here nor there. So that when all these are happening, there are schools that are emerging and Nkrumah is at the head of them. The meeting is then held in Accra, Ghana. And on the side of those who want unity, iconic individuals led by Kwame Nkrumah himself, Ahmed Sekou Touré of Guinea, Gamal Abdel Nasser of Egypt, and there are the others in the Monrovia group. And because our focus is on Nkrumah, I want us to remember what he says. It was on Saturday. It was on the 25th day of May. It was 1963. 32 heads of states and government assembled in Addis Ababa, Ethiopia, to discuss what Africa should be. And what happens? What happens is that Nkrumah tells his audience I am asking us, before we leave here, we should have one Africa, we should have one government, we should have one currency, and even suggest that the capital of the new United Africa should be in Leopoldville, in what is today the Democratic Republic of Congo and what is today Kinshasa. The leaders don't agree with him. And that is how the Organization of African Unity is created, a weak body. He then thinks that he can continue with that debate and lead to the unity of Africa. In 1964, he is present in Cairo when Gamal Abdel Nasser convenes the meeting. And in 1965, when he convenes the next meeting in Accra, Ghana, he thinks that today in Accra there is going to be unity. And I remember when I read, and subsequently in my younger days, meet Julius Kambarage Nyerere, he tells me in 1997, when he was the guest of honor on the occasion of the 40th anniversary of Ghana's independence, he says that when they left the meeting in 1965 in Accra, he heard an African leader saying, "You know, I'm happy. I thought that I would leave Ghana having lost my presidency, with Nkrumah being the president of Africa." And it is in that year that Nkrumah also writes the book, Neocolonialism, the Last Stage of Imperialism. And 1 year later, Kwame Nkrumah is overthrown in a coup d'etat, which we now know was engineered from the United States of America and from the United Kingdom. That year in 1966, when he is overthrown by General Kotoka and others, all his books are banned. All his speeches are banned. Nobody is to talk about Nkrumah. It is in 1972, after the coup d'etat led by Ignatius Kutu Achembong, that the restoration of Kwame Nkrumah begins. What is the Osagyefo's legacy, therefore, that we now remember him so very fondly? What did he do? What did he see that we could not see? To allow me this cliche, Nkrumah had the sight of a Jewish prophet. The things that he saw in those early days, many people did not see. He saw it in 1961 when he offered his forces to Patrice Emery Lumumba, that the neocolonial project was coming back. But they killed Lumumba in 1961. He saw that unity was necessary, and he said so in 1963 when they killed Silvanus Olympio in Togo. He wanted unity of a political kind. He knew that militarily, if you are weak, it doesn't matter. He was giving meaning to those words of John Henry Clark when John Henry Clark said, "It is useless to shout black is beautiful when black is not powerful. Black must be beautiful and black must be powerful. Only then will the world listen to you." So he wanted military strength. He knew that economically we had to be strong. And that is why he was saying, "Let us have one currency so that we are not going to be confused." Today, there are over 33 currencies in the continent of Africa, none of which is called a hard currency. 80% of African transactions are terminated in the United States dollars. African banks have their agency in European banks in New York and Washington. We either use SWIFT, which is incorporated in Belgium, or use IBAN. We do not have an African way of transacting. We are just improving it now. Nkrumah saw it in those early days. He wanted us to have one language as the lingua franca, not ignoring the others, but having one lingua franca. And even in those early days, he was toying with Kiswahili. And of course, he was also suggesting that Hausa, and indeed that Oromo, could be some of the languages. And he knew that that unity was significant. You know, when I remember Nkrumah, he also talked about having an open sky. So when you see the Yamoussoukro protocol on open skies in Africa, it is Nkrumah. When you see the human rights in Maputo, it is Nkrumah. When you see the Malabo Declaration on agriculture, Africa feeding itself, it is Nkrumah. When you see Africa Continental Free Trade Area, it is Nkrumah. When you see Africa Agenda 2063, it is Nkrumah. And if you doubt me, I urge you to read the letter that was written by Nkosazana Dlamini Zuma, the then chairman of the African Commission Union, in the year 2013, when he said that Africa must apologize to Kwame Nkrumah. And he says in that letter that all the things that we are doing now, whether it is Agenda 2063, whether it is Africa Continental Free Trade Area, these are the things that Nkrumah talked about in 1963. These are the things that he talked about in 1965. These are the things that he talked about earlier in 1964. These are the things that he talked about in 1958. These are the things that he could foresee in 1960 and 61 in Casablanca. So Nkrumah is indeed the father figure. And when a vote was carried out as to who is the greatest African leader in the 20th century, there was no competition. It was the Osagie for Kwame Nkrumah, and closely, of course, Julius Kambarage Nyerere. But Kwame Nkrumah was way ahead because he could see that African unity was the only way in which we could immunize ourselves from the stratagems of the neo-colonizer. Another thing that Nkrumah was very clear about was that Africa in the early days should be non-aligned and positively neutral. That is why in 1961, him, Kwame Nkrumah, President Sukarno of Indonesia, Jawaharlal Nehru of India, Joseph Broz Tito of Yugoslavia, said when they were forming the non-aligned movement, Africa will neither look east nor west. Africa will look forward. Nkrumah wanted a strong Africa. Nkrumah wanted a united Africa. Nkrumah wanted a prosperous Africa. Nkrumah wanted an Africa that used its resources, which are natural and human, for purposes of the continent of Africa. Nkrumah recognized that Africa could only be respected and Africa could only create an environment that is good for our men and women if Africa was united and using her resources for the benefit of the people of Africa. And that is why it is true that Nkrumah is dead, but Nkrumah never dies. He never dies because his ideas are as relevant today as they were when he articulated them in 1940s, in 1950s, in 1960s, and even in the early 1972s, before he went to be with his maker in Bucharest in Romania. And ultimately, he is now fully restored in Ghana and fully restored in the minds of the continent of Africa, a great African who bestrides the African continent like the fabled Colossus. Osagie for Kwame Nkrumah. Ladies and gentlemen, our conversation about the continent of Africa continue apace. Let us break until we meet again to continue those healthy and necessary conversations. Thank you very much.